you have a team working on the hardware, they're building machines to build your product. So if you want to change it, it's not like software that you change a few lines and you have an outcome.
These are originally live chat sessions that I held, and you can join them in the future every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on sales.n.pixels on Instagram. My name is Koji, and this is Sales and Pixels.
I'll be interviewing a UX and very important leader today. His name is Lucas Hirata. He is from Google. Lucas is a third Brazilian friend that I interview, though we're gonna talk in English. He's one of the creators for the new Google TV. He covers design and its many overlaps between smart displays, visual design, voice UI, physical UX. He was also the responsible for creating the design framework for Assistant on TVs, a platform that empowers brands, users with Google Assistant. Lucas also has a podcast and YouTube channel named If You Wanna Fly.
Hello, everybody. Let me see how my hair is going on here. Before you do any questions, I want to start with something really interesting, which is my thanks that I want to share with everybody that you've been part of my life and you don't know about that. But for people who don't know about that, Koji was UX head of UX for Orkut, which was the best social network ever. a lot of people, millions and millions of people in Brazil use that. And that's where I met my wife.
Oh, nice. Yes.
And it's funny because I mentioned that with other friends and everybody started to say like, oh, I also met my wife on Orkut. And it's like, it was a social network back then, 2004, right? Or something like that, right?
Yes.
It was a long time ago. And it was an amazing thing for many people in Brazil. And thanks, I want to thanks for that. Thanks, Koji, for that, because you were responsible for my, somehow for my kids being here with me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I met a lot of friends on Orkut. So that's a great way to kickstart our conversation.
Yes. Yes. And it's so different being the other side.
Yeah.
Usually I'm the one making the question. So it's just like a different dynamic. Hopefully I'm going to get used to it.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you're here. I feel honored to be able to talk with you today. I have a couple of questions, so I want to get started. So first one, I want to talk about your journey from Brazil to US. And I also know that you worked at huge and agencies before. So what are the highlights of your journey, in your opinion?
Yeah, highlights. My background is actually a really ordinary background. I went to design school like many people did, right? I think the difference from my background is that I came from a place that the perception of design and the value of design is a lot. It wasn't great back then. I came from Bahia, Brazil, and it's a place by the beach.
Salve Bahia. It's
a place. Everything is about entertainment, music, you know, a lot of things that people know about Brazil, they actually came from Bahia, right? A lot of music, food, interesting things came from there. But it's not a place known because of design culture, right? A lot of cultural arts and all of that, but not design, not much. And I studied in that place on late 90s, right? So after that, I started like doing freelancing for a long time. And it was a great experience being a freelancer because it's an opportunity to actually meet a lot of people with different budgets, right? And you grow a lot by doing it. And my next highlight on that story is actually when I went to Global. Global is the place where I believe that I got more connected to UX in general. We didn't call UX back then. It was, we used different terms back then, right? It was like late 2000s. And in Global, I had an amazing opportunity to meet a lot of great folks, learn a lot. And that was my school for UX. After that, I decided to, I asked to leave the company after 2.5 years. My ex-manager actually popped it here somehow on Instagram. And I decided to leave the company, right? And I had no offer. I had nothing in mind, right? I just said, look, I wanna leave. I wanna try something different. Fortunately, 1 hour later, a friend of mine called me from New York saying, Lucas, I heard that he just asked you to leave the company. Take a flight and come to New York. I want to hire you to work at Huge. Like 1 hour afterwards, you know.
That was Felipe, like, right?
Yeah, Felipe Memori, right? I don't know if you remember that story, but I was unemployed for 1 hour, essentially. And I was lucky because of that. He was a mentor for me. He's a mentor yet for me, right? And then I went to Huge. And I would just short the story here because at Huge, I was in first in New York. Then I went to back to Brazil to help to open the office in Rio. And I was there for a year and a half or something like that. And after that, I went to LA. And I was in LA for a long time, maybe 4 years or something like that. And it was an amazing experience as well because in LA, I did work for the many great companies that you just mentioned a few minutes ago, right? Like Apple, Hulu, Fox, FX. I can't even name like a lot of great companies. So I learned a lot during that time.
That's so cool. And one small detail that I have to talk about is you're a Nipo Brazilian too, right? Like you're a Japanese Brazilian, like I
yes.
am. What's
yes,
your story
exactly.
there?
Actually, your name, Koji, I was like, oh, is it Koji or Koji?
Koji,
because in Japanese,
yeah.
the G and the D, they're kind of like the same sound, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I sent a message to you and I said, oh, Koji. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how he wants me to call him. But yeah, I'm actually half Japanese as well. Hirata, my father is Japanese from Nagasaki.
Oh, cool. Yeah, my father is from Hiroshima.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, I think our parents, they had some issues in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. Anyways, you have a lot of experience and I think a lot of experience that I bet a lot of people would like to have, you know, working with smart displays. And I know you have a new product, a new small product around. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Like, what is the news and what's going on in your side with this new Chromecast?
Yes, I actually have it here by my side. This is the new Chromecast for people that are watching, not on the podcast, but watch on Instagram. This is the Chromecast itself, and this is the remote. So that week, last week, actually, we announced that. It was a good departure from the original Chromecast. And you know that the original Chromecast, the way that it used to work, you would have a content on your phone or your computer or tablet or something like that, and you would send whatever video was on from that place. We would cast it. We call it cast at Google. We would cast it to the TV, and you would use Chromecast for that. But we didn't have apps back then, and we also didn't have the remote. And what happened last week is that we announced the new Chromecast with the Google remote. And the other thing is that now we have a software called Google with Google TV, right?
Yeah. Which is not the old Google TV hardware, right? Because there was a hardware in the past.
You know what? I don't even think that people remember that.
No,
honestly.
I do
remember.
I think
you remember that.
I'm the only one, probably.
Yeah, people that work at Google, they remember that. But when the marketing team was thinking about, should we use the same name that you used in the past? And people like, the blogs will talk about that. But honestly, the market... People that actually buy the products.
Even the tech blogs don't remember that.
Only the tech blogs know about that. So it's not a big problem. Yes. What do you want to know about that?
I think the biggest question for me is how was the process to get to the final product? Because I know a lot of people might be curious, like, how was the connection between industrial design, visual design, and UX and motion? I think there are so many layers to think about when you're building a product like this. So how was the collaboration? I know voice UX is also a big part of it.
Yes, yes. So the way that product came to life, we used to have Android TV on the past. We still have it, actually, right? But I worked on that. I think you worked on that on the past as well, right, Koji?
A little bit, yes.
So the effort to bring Chromecast to life with Google TV, it's an effort that we call it cross PA, cross product team, product areas. That's what it's called at Google, right?
So this is not the Android TV team that built this.
This is also the Android TV team.
Also, okay.
Because the software running inside that now.
I remember Leo.
Is it? Yes.
Leo was one of the designers on that team.
Yes, he also worked on that a lot. Yeah, so the biggest challenge here is that when you build a product like that, there are so many layers that needs to be put together. And there is the cross PA, cross product area. It's almost like cross teams. I think that's easier to people to understand. It's you have assistant team, you have Nest team that does the hardware, you have the team that does music, the team that does YouTube, the team that does, there are many, many different teams, right, at Google. So there's that layer of complexity. You have to manage and you have to be able to navigate through all of these teams and negotiate the goals, milestones, negotiate what needs to be implemented, what won't be implemented.
You need to negotiate that.
A lot of collaboration. So that's from the team side. So there's also the collaboration from, we call cross-function, right? Multiple different functions at Google. And on that case, we do have hardware with ID design. We do have hardware researchers. We have a discipline that is a cross between UX and hardware that is called physical UX. We have voice UX. We call it CXD at Google, that is conversation experience design. We do have, what else? We do have marketing. We do have people responsible for writing the articles and everything that comes after the product is live. We have UX writers. We do have visual designers. We have prototypers. We have engineers. Program managers. So it's when you're working with something like that, the work touches so many layers and so many disciplines that as a designer, one of the biggest challenges is actually managing all the craziness that happens, right? And maybe because people have different goals, teams really have different goals, and you have to create strategies to collaboration strategies to align the goals.
Mm-hmm. And what was and your focus sure, on this project?
So my focus actually was that. It was... So another challenge is that, so my focus was creating, being like the bridge between different teams, creating the connection between the different teams, right?
Got it. The hardest thing.
Yeah, it's the hardest part, being honest. Yes. It's creating the connection between cross team, cross PA, and the connection cross function, the two layers, right? They're too complex. So I would have to go to a team and do negotiations with designers, PMs, all the disciplines in one team. Then I would have to go to another team, do negotiation with other teams. Another layer to make it more complex, partners. We have Netflix, Disney Plus, HBO. So there are many, many partners that you need to put on that soup, you know. It's really challenging. It's really challenging. I lost your question. You asked me something and I
yeah, what was your role here?
Oh, yes, my role. So my role was like managing all of the craziness, right? Because my team actually is the Nest team, and the Nest team is responsible for the hardware itself. But the Google TV software also, we want to put the software in the product. So we need to be responsible for that as well. So we had to work with the Android TV team to collect an assistant team to collectively create the software itself, right? So that was the other part. And it is really challenging. And then another layer, just to make it even more complex, is that you know that because you work with TVs, is that when you're designing for a remote, it's not like designing for a phone or a computer that like you find a lot of designers. It's really easy to find designers that have that knowledge. But when you're actually designing for remotes or for voice, it's there's no designers. There are no designers on the market, right? So essentially what you have to do, you have to mentor people. You have to get people from different teams and explain to them the rules of designing for a big screen, designing for something, for a product that controls another product, right? So there are many, many challenges on that.
You're almost like creating best practices from scratch, creating design systems from scratch, like everything from zero to one. I remember VR was the same, like they didn't have, I know that they sunsetted the, how they call it, the VR headset from Google recently. I forgot the name. But the they didn't have like, you know, same way they're like starting from scratch. Like, what's the design system? What happens if something is like farther away from your eyes or close from your eyes? So a lot of things you need to start from scratch.
Yeah, and the truth is that you have to mentor people and you have to make things move forward. But sometimes you don't have the knowledge yet. You have to build stuff, test, and see if it works or not. And then you can share the knowledge or spread the knowledge, right? But many times you don't have it. You have to build the knowledge. And the same with voice, right? In the past years, I have been working a lot with controlling GUI, controlling graphical user interfaces with voice, right? I have been doing that a lot on the past 3 or 4 years. And that's another area that there are no books. There are no tutorials. There's no literacy about that. So you have to learn how to do it, doing it. So it's really challenging.
Very cool. And one thing that I want to touch a little bit, and maybe you didn't face that problem, but I'm curious about the process in terms of time, the idea of time. Because when we think about software, like everything can be updated, right? Like you can say, oh yeah, we can have a new version next week, or we can update this, we can have a patch coming up. But with hardware, there are certain things that you have to decide like 1 year before that. And after you decide, there is no way to change it. So can you talk a little bit about that? Like the difference between the time perception with software versus hardware?
Yeah, so mom made a joke last week. Someone saw the Apple announced like some devices with some colors. Somebody made a joke like, oh, Apple next week, or Google next week is releasing the same colors. I'm like, dude, how much time do you think like we are doing that thing? Like, it's been like a long journey, you know? It's not like someone like releasing something next week, we're like using the same colors. It's not like that, right? It's exactly what he said. It's like years of investment to build something on the hardware side. And the reason for that is you can imagine that, for example, that remote here, if you open the remote, you remove the battery, you see that the remote was built in Thailand, the hardware itself, right? You can see on the label. And when you do that, you have a team working on the hardware, they're building machines to build your product. So if you want to change it, it's not like software that you change a few lines and you have an outcome right away. When you're doing changes on hardware, the process, it's way different. There are definitely things that you can do on hardware, but you can do some fine tuning, but changes on hardware, they take a long time. And it's not just about changing. You have to change and you have to test. As an example, let's say that you change something here. Let's say that you change the pressure of the housing of that thing here, the lead of the batteries, right? And you change that. So if you change it, it's not just like, oh, you change that. So now that you change that, you have to stress the test for that. You have to test the drop, right? If someone drops it, if it's gonna come out or not, you're gonna have to test people taking it out multiple times to see for how long that thing is going to last. You have to change the grip. You have to test the grip. You have to give it to people to test at home. So the process, it's like, it's completely different. So making a change compromises a lot of things. That said, there are certain things that actually you can do on the software side, because people don't see it, but there's a software running here. And just some communication here, as an example, there's the volume button. And when you press volume, there's actually a signal being sent to devices, right? So you can tweak. You can tweak what you're sending. You have buttons. They are digital. The buttons are not digital, but they send digital comments. So you can tweak the comments. You can do things like that. You can do like minor stuff, but changing the whole thing or changing major changes, it's almost impossible in short term. And you can have to imagine that you sign contract with a lot of people in other places. As an example, you sign contracts with the markets they are gonna sell that, and you have to send the devices in a specific timeline, right? So you cannot just be like, oh, I'm going to send it 1 week later. That doesn't work that way.
Yeah, people I didn't investing... work that much with hardware, but I think the closest thing that I worked with was Android. And Android, you have to wait a year if you don't get to this cut this year, because it's like a year release. But yes. Yeah, it's crazy. Very interesting.
At the same time, once that the product's there, you can actually tweak the software, right? And do over-the-air software updates, right? But it's not like changing hardware. It's not that easy.
Okay, so I think getting a little bit more thinking about future here. I know that design as a discipline keeps evolving. We talked about, you know, in the past how the things that we are doing now would be similar to web design, and you know, things evolve to UX and product design. And you're working with smart devices. I know some designers are working with self-driving cars and things that sometimes don't have a very clear UI, but the UX is definitely there. What do you see as trends for design in the future? Where design will be in the future in your head?
I'm glad that you're not asking the future of design. You're asking the trends, because then I'm not so committed, you know, to what I say here. It's really hard to predict things like that. So I think it's easier for me right now. Either I go blue sky and I give you like, oh, mind reader, or I go a little more humble and try to give you a perspective of what it can do on the upcoming maybe 2 or 3 years, right? So the way that I see is that, so there's the technology part and there's the society part, right? So the society part, I think that some transformations, they come with wars. Transformation comes with revolutions. Transformations, they come with diseases, right? When you take a look on the history of humanity, that's what creates transformation. Like the war, as an example, the Second World War made the women's rights and the to work rise because of that. It's not that it made it, but it accelerated that. So the way that I see is that when there are things like what's happening nowadays with COVID, it's going to accelerate certain things that probably would happen in the future, right? And the things that are accelerating to me right now is actually the way that you communicate with people, and communication needs to be extended not just to that communication that we're having here, but when people are sharing knowledge at school is a way to communicate. When people are actually having fun remotely, right? So all of that, I think, will be transformed because that revolution that we're experimenting right now, we are forced to experiment right now. This is from the society aspect, right? So the other thing that creates revolution is technology itself. And technology to create a revolution, you need to have things that are disruptive. I think for the upcoming futures, the piece that is missing to create the disruption is actually energy, battery energy. Because once that you have battery energy in general, we can have better AR and VR glasses. We can have better computers and phones that can last for longer, or we can increase the size of displays and things like that. So I think that we're still missing that part of energy to make it, to create that revolution. So this is for the long run. For the short term, I think that the two pieces that are really like interesting right now, one is definitely AR and VR, the upcoming years. We know that Apple, all the companies, all the big companies on the Silicon Valley, they are like putting money, a lot of investment, R&D on AR and VR. We know that. This is one part of that. The other part is, for me, the transformation that is happening, and it's slowly happening with the way that people use voice to interact with things. So these two factors together, I think for the upcoming years, it will create some transformations. I don't know exactly what things will be, but I think these are two different interesting aspects of that.
cool. And I think the aspect of the fact that design keeps evolving, I think it what makes it very exciting in my opinion, because I don't know, if you think about certain professions, it's very well defined. Hey, you want to do this, this is what it is, and it won't change over time. Design is just like constantly changing. And I remember when I started on web design, and at that time, to me, the exciting part was that design was getting out of the 2D space from a static standpoint and becoming not only in movement, but also interactive. So I think like, yeah, some of the things you mentioned, like the 3D aspect of it, the immersion or yes, the voice commands are like one step ahead.
Yeah. And it's interesting you saying that because there's one layer that I didn't mention that is the interplay between devices, right? Maybe I'm too biased here because I work on the smart devices in general. But when you think on about the devices that you have at home and the devices that you use, there's a whole communication, protocols of communication between the devices that it's happening. And I think that we will increase on the upcoming years in general. And that as an example, the way that you control your TV, maybe with the speaker, or the way that you get into a car and you control your car with the phone, or the way that you use maybe your watch to control a glass, or there's, I think the more products technology evolves, you're going to see that interplay happening and growing.
Cool. I want to make sure that we talk a little bit about your activities on Instagram and YouTube, your new channel. I know I want to talk on your channel in Portuguese. That will be a different type of conversation. But yes, I'm curious about like what your motivations are and how has been the feedback with your channel name, If You Want to Fly.
The motivation, I always had that desire of doing something like that. And I didn't know if I would do with talking about soccer or talking about movies. But you see the way that I'm talking here, like when I start talking, I don't stop, you know. I actually have to control myself because I talk too much during my conversations with folks. And I think the motivation is actually that, first, I always wanted to do that, I want to make clear, but the motivation is that I love interacting with more people and knowing people from different places. And this is one motivation. The second motivation is actually sharing whatever I or the ones around me, knowledge, people around me, knowledge, they, whatever knowledge they have, sharing that with more people, right? And I think that in sharing is not like, oh, I have the knowledge and I'm passing to you. It's actually by having conversations, you actually constructing ideas. And when you're constructing these ideas and people watching you having conversation and constructing these ideas, you're actually sharing much more than just information and data, right? You're sharing an experience itself.
And so, creating connections too, right? Like
yeah,
it's a lot.
Yeah, that part, it's like, it's amazing. It's amazing.
It's awesome.
I think the COVID for me was a transformation because being at home with my kids, not seeing any other adults, right? Only having relationship with folks at Google, they're just like, it's just like about work, you know?
And the bubble.
It's a negotiation. I'm actually having negotiation with people all the time. And when I talk to other people, they are not on that circle. I'm actually open to anything. Not that I'm not with my negotiations, but it's a different dynamic, right? It's a different exchange. And I think that's been an amazing experience. And probably you're feeling the same way because as you're doing it, you grow so much and you have to prepare yourself to these moments with people. You have to, oh, let me know what that person is doing. Let me know a little bit more about that person's fields of work. You just start to grow as a human being just when you're doing it.
Very cool. Yeah, just to give my quick opinion here too. In my channel, my initial goal was to reconnect with people that I worked with in the past. So that's why, you know, kind of open to be English so other people can understand me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very nice. And I appreciate that you're doing this for the Brazilian community. I think it's a great way to, you know, up-level people and let them also see outside what the opportunities are. I especially liked your video about how to make a pitch or a presentation for an interview.
Yeah.
I actually sent that to a couple of people. I think you had like great tips there. And if you want to highlight some of the tips here, it's open.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that actually, I did the presentation 2006, 2005, 2006. This is the 1.0. I actually have the updated version that it's, let's say, more advanced, right? But the whole thing about my presentation is that my motivation to show it is actually that I used that presentation and I got offers from Apple, Google, Facebook. I got offers from different companies, right? And I was so happy with that. And I was seeing like friends of mine going to interviews and being so unprepared that I was like, and I was starting to share like tips with them. And I felt that I should do the same with more people, not just with my friends. Now all my friends, they're working at Apple, Facebook, they're working big companies, right? And I'm like, look, I shouldn't hold it. I should just pass it to more people. Then more people can get their help as well. But the whole thing is that when I see people presenting design, it's usually they try to, it's almost like they're doing homeschool work, like showing, oh, teacher, here's what I did. And 4 + 5 was that because I'm, and it feels to me that it feels completely disconnected to what people do in real life, right? And my whole story on that presentation is that when you're doing a design presentation, it's almost like a pitch. You need to explain the whole process that you went through and the results in the end is so important as the outcome itself, as the design itself, and as important, more important maybe than the process itself. So my whole idea is that when you go to present something in an interview, go talk about the problem, the context, what problem you're facing, what's the context, what are the technology limitations that you had, what is the market, what are the aspects of the market, what is the problem that you face, is it a real problem? Maybe the client came to you with a problem that is not a real problem, maybe the problem is something else. And the example that I have on that video is that I'm showing how I was in a situation where my client wanted to do something and I was like, look, your problem is completely different. Let's invest on something else. And because of that, we solved the actual problem. The client made a lot of more money. And that's the result. And I don't talk about, oh, here's my matrix with my flows and my photos with my post-its. No one wants to see that. This is homework that you do. This is backstage. I don't want to see the backstage. I want to see the play, right? And that's my talk on that video.
And I love your personal touches to it. I think like as a person who interview a lot of people, I've found it fascinating that you research about the individuals and have their names on the screen. Like this small touch, it just feels that you're like, you're a great researcher, you're a great designer, right? Like you care about the users. It's all like embedded in your presentation. I love it.
I'm amazed that you said that. I'm having goosebumps here because it's when you're doing a presentation and you're saying that, oh, I'm a designer, I do research, I do prototype, I do blah, I do everything on the process, but you're not showing on your presentation. And I'm not saying that you're showing with photos or box or something like that. It needs to be shown on the way that you tell the story, right?
The user experience of the presentation.
Yes. That tip, like putting the photos and all of that, you know where I get that? I read that book, How to Influence People and Make, something like that, and Make Friends. I don't know. It's something like that. It's a really old book, you know, and that book talks about how it's important to know people's name, right? And then when I read that, I was like, if I go to an interview, I have to make an impression. I'm going against a lot of candidates. If that's the case, I want people having feelings and I want to trigger these feelings when I'm doing my presentation. And when you put people's name on screen, people are just like, oh, that guy that know my name. And people they're interviewing you, they start to navigate their minds, their ego, right? And you're fulfilling their ego and they don't know it. It's kind of like a manipulation trick, but it's an amazing thing.
I was listening to your conversation, UX now, and you were talking about the difference between working in an agency versus working for a product company. And you mentioned something around how, you know, in agencies, you're basically working for a client. So the incentives are different because your incentive is to do the best design work, but the final product is not the property from the agency. And in the product company, you're incentivized by how you can collaborate with others to create a product and have impact with that product. I just want to maybe like start a conversation and hear more about what you think on the differences between the two worlds.
Yeah, I think this is a major one because it's a foundation, right? It's a foundation on the behavior, the work, the way that the process is because of the way that you evaluate it in the end. And that it's almost like backwards, the way that the recompensation comes at the end drives the way that you construct the process. That's what it is in the end of the day. So I think also in the agents world, there are a lot of egos and competition because, as an example, if you have a client, you're gonna be taking care of that client and you're gonna have another maybe creative director or another designer working with another client. So you wanna do the best work on that with your group, competing against another team, because when another client comes, you wanna get the best client, right? So you start to create that competition environment, which is not that healthy, I think. And when you work in a company like in a big tech company in general or in a startup, or that the way that you measure the result is not with the visual outcome, right? It's actually with if the product itself had impact. Impact meaning it made money, it helped people, whatever the measure you have for the metrics you use for success, right? So there is that part. But I also want to call that agencies are amazing in one sense. If you are a young designer, I think it's an amazing environment to experiment different things because you're going to be have to handling different clients, different types of market spaces, right? So somehow it's a good school. But I would say that the life in a big tech company, it's healthier.
It's a very common topic that I like to bring back every now and then, because a lot of people that I provide mentorship, they have this question and they're like, oh, I don't know, where should I, you know, move my career towards? And I think it's nice to have like a different, always like different perspectives here in the...
Yeah, every time that I hear that, Mike, I always try to evaluate where the person is technically, right? How seasoned the person is, and the life situation. If you have kids, if you don't have kids, if you're like waiting to take some burden with time initially, right? I try to evaluate that. I think if you are in a position that you want to grow technically, and you can work like intense hours, I think it's important to be in it's really good to be in an agency because it's an environment that will give you good challenges on that sense because you have to respond fast. So I would say that to the person. If you're more seasoned and you want to challenges that are more impactful, I would try to go to startup or a company, a big company.
Thank you. All right. I'm afraid to say we're getting to the end. And I want to first say I'm honored to have you here. So excited to, you know, talk with you a little bit more, learn more about you. And I want to give you some space, and you can use however you want. If you want to share your channel, talk about something that is going on, that's your space.
Yeah, first I want to thank you, because I was supposed to say that on the beginning, and sorry that I'm doing it at the end, but I'm honored to be here. I've been watching your videos with many different folks, and I've been learning a lot, and thanks for that. It's an amazing thing that we're doing. And for the things that I've been doing lately, there is my channel that If You Want to Fly. We do have the channel on YouTube. I do talk a lot, and I'm a really silly person on Instagram. If you people don't mind to see someone doing silly stuff on Instagram, this is who I am. And I share other things on Instagram as well, but it's only mostly in Portuguese. But I would love to get in touch with more people. And I also have a mentorship program that I'm running for free. I do that every Friday for 1 hour. It's actually booked until, I think, June or July 2021.
Detail.
I only share for 1 day and the whole thing's booked. But please get in touch. You know, I love meeting people, and I would love to get in touch with the audience as well. Right. And my LinkedIn, everything, it's just Lucas Hirata. You're going to find me really easily. LucasHirata.com as well, if you want to get in touch with me. And once again, thanks a lot, Koji, for that. You're doing something amazing, sharing all of that with a lot of people. And I hope to see more amazing folks here. I have some suggestions, by the way.
Awesome. We'll chat more, Lucas. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
My name is Koji, and this is Cells and Pixels. Every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on cells.n.pixels on Instagram. Thanks for listening.